in band.
Me neither.
I was in choir.
Nerdier than band.
Nerd, yes. It's like band, but worse.
No.
No?
No. What did you do?
Well, I was Patrick editor of the school newspaper, like all the cool kids.
Okay.
I was the photo editor of our school newspaper.
Jeez.
I did nothing with editing of any kind or a newspaper.
I also was in a bowling league.
Were you really?
Yep.
Oh my gosh. I like to play with bumpers out.
You're an adult.
Yep. But I still take my
kids. What's even the point of playing when you, like, I get if you have kids, fine. But like, if you're an adult playing with bumpers, what's even the point? Like,
Several years ago, our youth group, we went and we put the bumpers up, but the goal was to get the lowest score.
Oh.
And so that was fun. Because getting a strike and being like, oh gosh.
No. Now Now I have to pull more frames.
Yeah. All right. Welcome back to Beyond Sunday Podcast.
Whoop, whoop.
Where we are exploring how to take our faith beyond Sunday morning. This is Patrick Nazaroff, and with me, as always, Pastor David Bowser.
Hey, Patrick.
And Katie Phillips.
Hello.
All right. Of everybody events, it's our last recording.
I've been great. I'm rested, rejuvenated, I'm ready
to go. Travel the world.
I did. Figuratively speaking.
You've had a lot of experience, yeah. We went to
like,
reading the Serengeti.
What?
Serengeti?
It's in Africa.
Oh, that's right.
It's all some animals.
Yep.
Cut that out.
Rhinoceros?
That joke did not
Are
land.
They rhinoceroses? Rhinoceri?
Rhinoceri.
Really?
Rhinoceroni. They're rhinoceronis.
It's the San Francisco treat.
Giraffes.
Yes, giraffes.
Lions.
Uh-huh.
Sure.
Yeah, all those things.
Birds.
Yeah. Those are all animals. Got any other animals for us?
No, I'm just thinking of the ones that were up on our walls.
Yep.
All right, well, we're going to take a look today at kind of a biblical concept and see how it translates to our own modern faith and things like that. So,
all right.
We'll get into that a little bit later. But first, we have some news to go over.
Do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do.
Thank you. When was the last time you moved houses?
2.5 years ago.
Yeah. Just over a year ago.
Year and a half.
Yeah. How do you feel about moving?
Hey, this is the first time that I've been like with a group of people and I'm the one who's been in a house the longest. That's kind of satisfying. Aww. Sorry.
Ooh,
like,
look at you.
Look at me,
yeah.
Look at you.
Adulting.
How do you feel about moving?
I hate it. It's not fun at all.
Yeah.
I mean, okay.
No,
because there's different kinds of moving.
Ugh.
So like moving from your house you grew up in to college, then having to move back home
every year, not fun.
Moving from one house to another.
Yes.
I liked that.
You liked moving your whole house from one place to another.
Well, a new study has
found. Yes, I threw away a bunch of stuff.
A new study has found that 1 in 10 Americans would prefer to spend a week in jail over moving.
No. What?
Yeah. 1 week in jail over moving. And
that's crazy.
Kind of get it. Like,
yeah, moving
packing takes a long time. And then, like, the moving process.
Did you hire movers?
We did hire movers.
Did you hire movers?
Yes.
No. Yeah.
You didn't?
Movers are the worst. No, it's not true. We hired movers.
You had to have. You moved from out of state.
We hired movers, but I still packed all the stuff myself.
Yeah, like we didn't hire packers.
Their job was to put it on the truck and take it off the truck.
Gotcha.
Right.
Yeah, the morning of our move, I moved something down to our car and I fell down our stairs that were outside in our apartment complex.
See, I've never lived in a two-story house.
Yeah, and hurt my arm, couldn't move it. And had to like ask the movers to like finish packing up some stuff for me since I couldn't like do it.
Poor Patrick.
They were very nice. Yeah.
Pobrecito.
Yes. But yeah, moving sucks. 1 in 10 Americans would prefer spending a week in jail over moving.
Do I get like a week in jail with all those other Americans who are only there because we don't want to move? Or do I have to be like in jail with real criminals?
In real jail. Yeah, what jail am I in here?
All right, let's be clear about this.
Also, 1 in 5 Americans say they would rather that moving is more stressful than planning a wedding.
Negative.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know because you're men.
I was involved in the planning.
Of yeah, that's probably. That's probably.
No,
accurate.
You were not.
I
were
was.
You really? Yes. I'm calling Amanda.
She will vouch for me. I was
like, I mean, did you plan the service? Because you're a pastor. Like that's what you do.
First off, why do you like discount that as if that's not really planning the wedding? And second,
but like, there's so much more to it.
I have no, and I was involved in every part of it.
And 27%.
Did you help pick out her dress?
Okay, we're moving on.
I did not pick out a dress. I picked out my tux.
You didn't say yes to the dress. 27% think there's more pressure placed on them during a move than a job interview. So a quarter of us think those things.
Yeah.
They find the average move will result in at least 2 nights of lost sleep.
Sure.
Yep. 4 hours of hard labor.
Only four?
Oh, four?
Well, I mean, this is the during of, you know.
Still, if you're doing it in only four, man.
It good took for us you. A whole day.
Hard labor. Hard labor. Not just regular labor. And at least two cries.
At least two cries?
Yeah.
I don't cry about moving. I just hate it. I don't stress.
I got emotional enough. Leaving our house because it was the house we brought our kids home in.
I haven't yet been in a house long enough to be emotional about leaving it.
Now, do you still have boxes packed in your home?
Yes.
Nope.
Yes, me too.
Y'all.
Also, been in the house the longest. And absolutely.
It takes at least 4.5 months to unpack all boxes.
We did. I mean, it did take about...
Or 2.5 years. It's fine.
No, we were there for a year and then we had like major company come in for Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
So like we had to have a guest room ready. Like,
yeah. Oh, we had guest rooms ready.
That's where all of our boxes were. Sure. We're all in the guest room. We're like, yeah, we don't need this room.
So we're currently in the process of like turning the room that was like the storage room for all those boxes into the nursery for baby boy that's to be born. So this is like the final, okay, we haven't opened this box in the last 2.5 years. Can we really justify keeping this thing anymore?
No, throw it all out.
Well, we're working on it. Stop yelling at me. Sometimes there are things you want to keep that you don't open all the time.
Okay, well, we're moving on. I have another piece of news for us.
No, I'm still telling Katie why. I'm still justifying my behavior. Yeah.
And Pastor David helped plan his wedding.
I did help plan my wedding.
Don't judge me.
All right, we've seen teens turn into wolves, robots turn into cars, orphan children turn into adult superheroes. But now we have a new movie coming up where a pastor...
Yes.
Turns into a dinosaur.
What?
In this movie called...
You were so excited.
Velocipastor.
You're kidding me. Velocipastor? Oh my god. Yes. All right.
This is a low budget movie.
I can only imagine.
I did watch the trailer for it.
I hope that the pastor is like just in one of those dress up dino suits.
It
like,
kind of is.
This hasn't been going around your clergy.
No, I've not yet heard about Facebook this. I'll have to share this with them, yeah.
Groups.
I actually did watch the trailer for it earlier.
Does it look as awesome as it sounds?
Did you really?
It looks real bad.
Like, and, is it a pastor really in a dinosaur costume?
Like
one of those blow-up ones?
No,
like...
it's, you know, it's kind of like, you know, they don't want to turn their hand too quickly here, give away what they're going on. But you do see some glimpses of the Velocipastor, and he does look like he's in a foam dinosaur suit. Yeah, so it does not look great. There's also ninjas involved in this movie. He fights them for some reason.
The Velocipastor, or like, is it a pastor's like superhero power is to turn into a dinosaur? Or?
I think it's more like a wolfman situation. Like it's the curse. Oh, like okay. He does not want to become a Velocipastor.
Sure,
because who would?
But he, you know, ends up there. He does. I see. It's a Catholic priest, by the way, and he does kill somebody in the middle of confession.
Oh,
because they confess something bad, and he got super angry.
And turns into Velocipastor. So it's kind of like Wolfman meets the Hulk meets Jurassic Park.
A little bit of those things.
The creation story meets.
So would you...
Really setting up for success.
Would you want to give a sermon in a dinosaur outfit?
Absolutely, I would.
Do it. So would.
Velocipastoring.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I feel like we could come up with a better dinosaur pun than Velocipastor.
I think Velocipastor is pretty good.
I think that's
good.
Awesome.
You got a better one for us?
Not like off the top of my head, but I'm thinking we could come up with a better one.
Okay. Well, you'll think about it.
Yeah.
Write in your suggestions.
Yeah, absolutely. BeyondSundayPodcast@gmail.com. Let us know your favorite religious dinosaur puns.
What?
No, wait. Those are just...
What animal/dinosaur would you want to turn into, you know,
as a pastor? If I were going to be a pastor that was cursed and turned into another animal, what would I turn into? I've always wanted to be a dolphin. Why not? We'll go with that.
Oh, I so wish I could do a dolphin sound right now. I almost tried.
Go ahead and try. Do it. Nope. Go nuts. A dolphin could be fun.
A pass.
Except that I guess a pass fin, yeah. I guess if I turned into a dolphin as a pastor, like in the middle of a sermon, I'd be in trouble because I'm not really that close to water.
Yeah, you're gonna have to get a...
Maybe a bird. A bird, because then I could fly.
You're going to have to get a church by the ocean.
Yeah.
You know.
I think I'd turn
into... I would come.
Maybe an eagle.
To an ocean church? Mm-hmm. I don't like the ocean.
I don't like the sand. I like the water.
No, it's overrated.
There are already a lot of bald pastors. Is that the same as a bald eagle pastor? Is that just a bald pastor?
Getting there.
That joke didn't land. I gotta work on that.
The tagline for Velocipastor is a man of the claw.
That's that's funny.
There you go. All right, let's move on here. Talk about our big topic today.
Dun, da, da, da.
Yeah, so I said we're going to talk about a biblical issue. So we were talking about this earlier and thought, let's just make this a podcast.
We were, mm-hmm.
Yeah, so in Scripture, Paul will have this debate amongst Christians that they were in an environment where their town was sacrificing animals to idols and then selling the meat from that sacrifice, like in the local meat market. And so they were asking, hey, Paul, is it okay if we eat the meat sacrificed to idols? And so we were talking about that as a staff, about what that looks like. So Paul has a lot of thoughts on this, and a lot goes into several of his letters about meat sacrificed to idols.
Yeah.
Because this is a thing of the day. We probably aren't focusing this right now, right? Like, you're not going to Whole Foods and you're like, should I eat this meat sacrificed to something?
That is not my question.
I'm not thinking that.
My question is, like, should I spend my entire paycheck at Whole Foods?
Sure. Yeah, fair enough. Yeah.
Okay. That question is not what was this.
Do I need to take question? Out a second mortgage, right?
Yeah. But regardless, wherever I'm buying my
wherever you're meat, buying your meat,
I'm not thinking, was this sacrificed to an idol?
Yeah. And so we were trying to think of, like, well, what does that look like today for Christians? How does that operate?
Right.
So, Pastor David, do you want to sum up kind of some things that Paul is saying about this topic?
Yeah, so I think some cultural context here is helpful. The primary time that Paul brings this up, he mentions it a number of times, but the primary time he's writing to the Corinthian church. This is in his first letter to the Corinthians. I think it's the 8th chapter, if I'm remembering this correctly. And while he's doing that, Corinth itself was a very wealthy city, in part because of where it is geographically located.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a lot of trade that passed through there. And so there was a lot of Roman culture that centered in Corinth as it grew and as it developed. And because of the wealth, there were a lot of temples to various Roman gods and goddesses in that area. And so this was a real concern that Paul was trying to address for Christians who were not originally Jewish, right? They were Corinthian Roman citizens, and so they had grown up going to the temple to eat this meat, because as far as, like, that culture at that time, really the only way you ate meat was if it was meat that was sacrificed to a god, right? You would go to the temple, you would buy the meat that had been sacrificed, you would buy it, and then that was the meat that you would consume. It would be like going to the grocery store today, except that before the grocery store sold it to you, it was blessed by a priest to whatever.
Yeah, since it didn't have modes of, like, refrigeration,
right.
Only meat you could eat was fresh, and if you're living in a city, you're probably not a shepherd or a farmer.
Yep.
You know, you've created a new trade.
Yep.
So how do you get meat?
So how do you get meat? You go to the temple and you buy the meat from the temple. Yeah. So the very legitimate question for these people who are becoming Christians was, can we keep eating this meat? Is that okay? And Paul's trying to figure out, or try to help them figure out what to do with that. And Paul kind of takes, I think, two stances. There's compatible stances, but they're kind of separate stances. On one hand, Paul says it really doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. Right,
yeah.
What you put into your mouth does not affect your salvation. That's not the point. But Paul also says that we need to be aware of how what we are doing affects the ability of others to come to belief in Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't say it exactly like that. That's my paraphrase of it. Mm-hmm. So Paul would say, you know, don't put a stumbling block in front of others.
Right? Sure.
So one way that we think about this sometimes is like with language, right? You know, we have all sorts of standards of how we talk in words that are appropriate or inappropriate. And it's not that, we often cite the commandment, don't take the Lord's name in vain, as a reason not to curse, right? I mean, that's kind of the general citation there. Except that most of our curse words are not involving the Lord's name.
Right.
And so the purpose of not cursing is not to not take the Lord's name in vain. It's that cursing is considered culturally inappropriate and might prevent someone else from being able to come to faith in Jesus when we use a certain language. And so in the same way, Paul will say, look, if you're sitting with someone and eating a food sacrificed to idol is preventing them from having an opportunity to come to Jesus, then you should be thinking very carefully about whether or not you're going to eat that meat or not, and potentially even refrain from eating that meat. But eating the meat is not going to prevent Jesus from being your savior in the same way that Jesus is my savior.
Yeah, he'll definitely go in and say, like, look, there's nothing wrong with it. And the stronger Christian should submit to the weaker Christian in those types of things.
Yep.
So if you say there's nothing wrong with eating the meat and you're very content and satisfied with that, and your neighbor has issues, you should refrain from doing that in front of them, because they, in your opinion, would be the weaker Christian.
Right.
They have the more rules and structure, Paul may say, is the weaker Christian in that.
Yeah.
In this scenario.
Yeah.
And so what does that mean for us today, you know, as Christians? You mentioned swearing as an example of what this will look like. So the idea of how we speak in our language.
Yeah, sure.
Maybe there's nothing wrong with saying a curse word when you're frustrated or angry.
Right,
or
when I hit my thumb with a hammer, you know,
whatever. Or things. But it does maybe have an impact on other people.
Yeah.
And some would argue a Christian swearing in front of non-Christians would appeal to them.
Right.
And some would argue it would not appeal to them.
Well, and so, part of, you know, Paul will address this too, right? He'll say, you know, among the Jews, I'm a Jew. Among the Gentiles, I'm a Gentile, right?
Yeah.
Part of that is knowing the audience that you're playing to. Like, you know, the same rule is not going to apply every time, particularly for people, as Paul would describe them, who are strong Christians. I mean, let's be clear, we're using that in Paul's understanding of the strength of a Christian, not in in a modern context necessarily. Yeah. But so, you know, for someone who is going into different cultures, yeah, we have to make cultural
concessions
in order to communicate effectively with that group, right? If you're talking to a group of people in France, they're going to have a different cultural understanding than a group of people in New York or a group of people in Kenya or a group of people in China, right? You have to how to understand how different images and metaphors are going to be carried through in those places. And so in the same way, there are cultures within the United States where swearing is not going to be a big deal. And where perhaps people feel more free to be themselves and to enter into that process because it's an understanding that swearing is not necessarily an affront to God, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we have to think about how that works reality. Now, that's different from using God's name in vain, right? That's a different thing than just using words that culturally we've said are inappropriate. Which is hard to talk about when we're not going to say any of those words in the podcast because we don't have a bleep button. So, but y'all get what I'm saying with that.
I can make a bleep button here.
Yeah.
Bleep, bleep, bleep.
It sounds so much worse if you just...
Bleep, bleep. Talk.
Now it sounds like we're saying all sorts of inappropriate things. And we're not,
Look, hey, the Bible says curse words. So.
The Bible does, yeah.
So,
but we don't understand them as curse words anymore.
Yeah, because culture changes. Kate, what do you think about this idea of meat sacrifice to idols?
I agree to an extent. The part that makes me kind of...
Squeamish?
Not squeamish. I'm
Riled
just
going
to vomit. But,
please don't vomit.
No. My concern is when, say you do curse in front of a non-Christian, and that Christian, or that non-Christian then decides that they just don't like Jesus even more because a Christian just cursed. I feel like that puts a pressure on Christians that they feel like they have to be perfect all the time. And that's my struggle with that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I'm not perfect.
Sure.
And I'm not going to pretend that I'm perfect.
Do you think Paul is calling us to be perfect?
Not necessarily, but I think that it just puts in a pressure on us to try to be as, like, perfect all the time. And really, specifically, in front of non-Christians.
Yeah.
So then are we putting on a front of who we really aren't, like, who we aren't as people? Like, do you see what I'm saying?
Or are those the people we should be? Is that front who God is actually calling us to be? Because who God is calling us to be is not the same person that I am today.
Right, and you can go into different Christian denominations, and I could not drink any alcohol.
Sure.
I could not dance.
Yep.
I could not do any of these things.
Worship with instruments.
Sure.
As a woman, teach a man.
And, and to even a fellow Christian, I look like an unchristian person.
Yes.
So, like, I think... there's so many different facets to this that make this so complicated because it doesn't matter who your audience is. You're going to offend somebody or make somebody think that you're not a good person regardless because of anything.
Yeah. You know, I think what was helpful at Paul's time is that there, you know, at one level, there weren't the divisions within Christianity that we have to face today, right? So there wasn't the risk factor of some Christians saying, oh, we have the one true faith and you all... don't know what you're actually talking about. But what there were people who were trying to uphold the Jewish traditions that had led into this Christian faith, which definitely would not have allowed people to eat food sacrificed to idols. And Paul kind of breaking that down and saying, that's not the point.
Like, right.
You know, what you're eating is not the point, but how your actions are being perceived as an opportunity for someone else to encounter Jesus matters. And, you know, so on one end you have the kind of Jews and Jerusalem, who are coming to faith in Christianity, who are holding that law really tightly mm-hmm. and saying, this is what mm-hmm. we need to hold on to. And mm-hmm. Paul's breaking that down.
Right.
And at the other side, you have these Jews who are of Roman background coming to faith and saying, well, we still want to be able to do all these other things. And Paul's saying, no, you're called to live differently. Like, you're called out of that faith. Mm-hmm. And so for both groups, Paul's call mm-hmm. is to something different, is to a new way of life through Jesus. And, right. and so both groups are being called into something that should ultimately make them uncomfortable, I think.
Well, I think to address some of the things, Katie, you were asking, is it not about like this anxiety of like, am I constantly messing up in front of the people around me and are they judging me for those things? But if you know that the person I'm going to go have dinner with does not like cursing, and I choose
sure,
to
I'm
curse.
Sure, I'm not going
to
go. I'm not going
to. Yeah, I'm not, okay, I'm not sorry, accusing you of that. I'm not like, saying that those things. But I'm saying, I think this is the question, because they're asking these questions, right. not about mystery strangers, but about people right. we know.
Yeah.
And so
people
how,
who are direct contact.
How do I, as a Christian, one, celebrate my own Christian freedom, and two, handle things with respect to other people? And where does that necessarily respect end?
Mm-hmm.
You know, at what point do I say, well, I don't no longer have respect for this kind of situation that I'm in? So maybe swearing is one of those things. A few years ago, we did a mission trip with an organization with their high school kids, and they sent out a dress code that was probably very much more harder and more complex for our female participants than our male participants, mm-hmm. like most dress codes are.
Right. Mm-hmm.
We don't have a dress code in our youth program. And I think earlier, several months ago, we talked about kind of this purity culture and how I'm against it. I don't think that that's necessarily a healthful thing. And so some of our kids and parents were like, what's the deal with this dress code? And I explained, like, we are working with an organization that has different beliefs than ours, and we'll follow it out of respect.
Right.
This is a way to respect them, even though you may disagree
right.
with it. I don't think it's a healthy situation for a girl to show up on that mission trip and be like, well, I'm wearing a bikini anyway.
Right.
Because I don't care about your rules. I don't think that starts a good dialogue. Mm-hmm. But they're probably, if they said things that I think were contrary to scripture that we were supposed to respect, like, you know.
You're supposed to come in and eat food that was sacrificed to idols.
Yeah. Or you know, like, the way we have it set up is like the women are going to serve the men, you know,
yeah.
like things like that. I'm like, well, that doesn't make any sense to me. We won't respect
right.
that.
Yeah.
So what lines do we draw that respect at? It's probably hard, right?
Yeah.
So,
mm-hmm.
But I think that's ultimately what Paul's getting at. Like, how can you in your Christian freedom choose to engage in subjugation for the good of someone else?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And that's tough.
Yeah. I mean, you know, if you've spent time with people who are recovering from alcohol addiction or something like that, right? You know, if you're not an alcoholic.
Yeah, I would not show up with like a bottle of wine to somebody who's
exactly,
an alcoholic.
Right?
Go, hey, we're
sure.
here.
And so, you know,
I mean,
but you as someone who's not an alcoholic
right.
can have a glass of wine and can stop. And it's not a problem.
Sure.
But if you know you're in the presence of someone who's newly in recovery, who's still struggling with that
I
battle very hard,
them.
You wouldn't drink around them.
Right.
Right. In the same way, when we come around people who are new to faith, I think this is what you're getting at, Patrick, there might be concessions that we make in our own faith where we're like, I know I can do this thing and handle it, whether that's you know, swearing or whether it's going to see a certain movie or whether it's engaging in a conversation about a certain topic that perhaps is more challenging to my faith or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can handle this because I've been doing this for a long time and I'm confident in where I'm rooted. But for someone else, that might be a real struggle for them, right?
Right.
You know, this is the difference between someone like myself who kind of grew up in the church and going to college and encountering faiths that were different than mine and
mm-hmm.
being able to enter into a dialogue versus someone who is coming into college and trying to figure out Christianity.
Right.
And like, they often have to take a very hard stance of, no, I have to believe this, and I can't allow for that dialogue because they can't handle it, right? We don't have the mental or spiritual or emotional capacity in those early years of our spiritual development to handle those challenges.
Right.
And so I think that's a piece that we have to wrestle with there, is how do we engage in that process with an awareness of we're trying to help others, and helping those others might involve a sacrifice on our part.
I do think something that you mentioned here that I would like to challenge is, like,
sure.
I don't think that's just Christians who are new to faith
sure.
who
yeah.
have these things. I
yeah.
think there are Christians who are lifelong Christians who still have very rigid
mm-hmm.
expectations of
yeah.
Christianity.
I think that was, you know, my example, but yes, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. So, but I do think it's the idea of, because Paul will often talk about, hey, there's freedom in the Christian life.
Mm-hmm.
And I think sometimes we don't project that freedom very well to the world of, like,
mm-hmm.
there's a lot of freedom here.
Mm-hmm.
But how does one use the freedom for someone else versus for myself?
Yes.
Is part of what it means to be a Christian. How do I use my freedom to engage differently than saying I can just do whatever I want mm-hmm. within my Christian faith? Several years ago, I'll use another example. A camp that I was working at that I had left and came back for the summer, and this was right when Harry Potter Book 7 mm-hmm. was released. And yeah. I don't know if you remember the storm around Harry Potter,
yeah.
but it was serious
for Christians. I was also working at camp when Harry Potter Book 7 came out. Okay. I remember it very well.
Yeah, yeah. And it was a thing that people did not like Harry Potter. Mm-hmm. Christians were thinking it's about witchcraft,
yep.
That it's bad, you should not read it. And many of the staff wanted to read Harry Potter, and the camp, I was not a part of this, made the rule of, like, if you want to read Harry Potter this summer, you can read it, but in the staff hut, not in your cabin in front of the kids, because you don't know what their parents and they might think about Harry Potter.
Sure.
And so that's a way of saying, like, we don't think Harry Potter is necessarily wrong mm-hmm. to engage in, mm-hmm. but we acknowledge some kids and their families do.
Yep.
And there's not necessarily the reason to have those kinds of conversations with an 8-year-old.
That doesn't need right. to distract from what we're actually here to yeah. accomplish.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I think that's part of it. It's like, I don't think this is wrong. You do. And so I'll respect that, even right. if I think you're wrong.
Right.
So, like, how do we, you know, respecting someone even when we think they're wrong
mm-hmm.
is tough, is part of what this food sacrifice to idols looks like. Mm-hmm.
So how then do we know when we are going to draw the line?
That is a good question.
Right. I mean, because we encounter other Christians mm-hmm. all the time who have a much stricter understanding of how we live in the world all the time, right? Whether that's women's roles, as we've talked about before, whether that's interpretation of scripture from a literal perspective versus other ways of looking at that, or if it's just, you know, whether or not you're allowed to drink or dance or have instruments in worship, right? Yeah. So where do we, as people of faith, to decide to draw? Because we can't all just draw the line for ourselves.
Sure.
Because I mean, it just doesn't make sense to me that that's how it would work. So where do we draw those lines?
And I think this is where it gets complex. Go ahead, Katie.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say it's different. If I am going to somebody's church or we're at somewhere and nobody dances, drinks, or sings with instruments, I'm not going to go there and demand that they change.
Right.
Or expect them mm-hmm. to, or bring a flute.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, I mean, like, that's just not, because I'm going there,
you
right?
You bring a flute to other churches?
No, do you know what I'm saying? You
I get carry my a flute point. Everywhere I go.
Okay, whatever. No, but then at the same time, if people are coming to a different area or a different church or a different mm-hmm. whatever, and we are singing with instruments and dancing or whatever, I would assume that those people would come into a new space and do what
they're doing. Yeah, so what if you walk into a church and you're told, okay, you, ma'am, need to sit over here away from your husband because you're not allowed to sit, you know, the men are going to sit up front and you're not allowed
to sit. I have the choice to leave. Like, I mean, if that truly offends me and I'm like, absolutely not.
But it's not about being offended. It's about where does our faith say, that's not how. Mm-hmm. I mean, and yes, you have a choice to leave, and maybe that's
I would
what your
not.
Faith would call
you're right. If I was going into a building where this is how people worship, or this is how people sit, or this is I don't know where I am, but somewhere where I can't sit with my husband, then I have the option to go, babe, we're leaving.
Right, but so what is our role as people of faith to stand up to that organization and say, this
I would
is,
not
this is
feel
not representative.
Comfortable to stand up right there and then just say, I can't believe you're not going to let me sit with my husband and then walk out.
But
I might send a letter. I don't know.
But they are presenting a face of Christianity to the world that is not in line with what you believe or what I believe about how
sure.
Christianity is supposed to be presented.
Christians all over are not sharing the same ideas of faith.
But this is the point, right?
So right.
Where...
Sorry,
go ahead. You're saying right, except you're not agreeing with me. So where is the point at which we as people of faith, and we'll say particularly as people of this congregation, right? Where is the point where we say, look, the Christianity that you are presenting is not in line with the gospel that I believe is being proclaimed by Jesus Christ? Where do we draw that
line?
So
where do we tell other Christians that they're wrong?
Sure.
Is that
yeah,
like,
I guess.
Well, because, where do we say,
where do,
you're wrong,
where do we, say,
we are right.
Where do we say the core of your belief is no longer something that I can respect? Right, that I can no longer say this is just a difference that we have. I have to say this is outside of what the gospel calls us to.
Fine.
Where
if you want to,
where do we draw that line? Do you understand?
That is a personal thing. I don't know that anybody's line is going to be the same. Because my tolerance for something might be totally different than your tolerance for something on a personal level.
Except, do you see what I'm saying? Except that if we have a congregation X down the street from Lord of Life who is saying, you know, women and men can't sit together, and men are going to sit up front, and women and children are going to be up in the balcony, and you know, so on and so forth. That's their stance. If I just allow that to continue, then other people in our community are going to have the perspective that that is Christianity. Yeah, and so at some point, I have to say, as a person of faith, I have to say that is not a Christianity that I support.
Sure. There's lots of Christianity that I don't support all over Facebook, that I'm friends with people who I'm like, I don't agree with what you are saying about Christianity or about people in general sometimes.
So it is.
I'm not calling them out for it.
Why not?
Well, and then maybe this is what level should you? Maybe this is, you know, we're getting trapped in the weeds on this one example.
Yes.
Because there's plenty of examples.
Yes, there are.
Of what if a Christian is protesting a gay pride parade.
Yep.
What should you do?
Go to a gay pride parade and you're going to have Christians participating in it and protesting alongside of it.
Yes. Yeah.
Or driving away.
Right.
Right.
You know, and ambivalent toward the whole thing. You know, and all three areas of Christianity could be represented there. Where should you be is tough.
Yeah.
And I think it's okay to say it's tough and not know where the exact line
is. But can't that be a personal thing? Like, do we have to say that the Christian church needs to come out and just say this is what everybody believes and this is what everybody should do because this is what the gospel says? Because I guarantee you somebody else is going to look at that same gospel and say, no, it says this instead. So, like, isn't that a personal, individualized thing versus a whole church-wide?
Obviously it is. You know, no church body can make anyone make social stances on Facebook, and if you do, you're wrong to make them do those things. And I also don't want to get into a place where Christianity is putting itself in a situation like I think we unfairly did to our Islamic brothers and sisters after, like, terrorism attacks. Like, how come you're not decrying these things always?
Sure.
How come you're not always saying this is bad? Yep. Well, I don't want to point the same finger at my fellow Christians and be like, how come you're not always saying Christian persecution is bad? Because you can't do that always.
Right.
And then that's your life, if that's what it is. But how can you stand up for injustice is a real question. And these are questions that go from these big issues, but also these small issues. We mentioned having a drink with an alcoholic. Well, there's probably people in our social circles that are alcoholics that we don't know about.
Yep.
And so how do you go out to dinner with a group of women
and not know
where do you draw the line on how much you should drink if you don't know?
Right.
And that's hard, you know, because that's a complex question that doesn't have an easy answer.
Sure.
And I think ultimately Paul, I think, desires for us is if you are the stronger you are in your faith, the more willing you are going to be to submit to somebody else's rules and regulations if they do not conflict with scripture or issues of faith.
Right.
And so,
but I still think it's okay that we have choice and that we can decide, I'm not going to that worship where you have to sit men over here, women over here, children over here. I can get up and walk out. I also don't feel like I have to tell them that they're wrong. Like, if that's how these people want to believe and want to live their lives, do you.
Sure.
And then if this is how we want to live and do and be, and that's why we have 18 million, I don't even know how many, a lot of churches and beliefs and religions. I mean, we could walk anywhere and say, you're wrong, you're wrong, you're wrong, you're wrong, you're wrong, because I'm right. This goes back to last week's conversation, right? Of how everybody wants to be right.
Or several weeks ago.
Or several weeks ago, whenever it was.
In podcast land. Yeah, I think that's a fair point, but I think that sometimes, as people of faith, and I personally have this tendency too, so I don't want to feel like I'm just attacking you. I think that, you know, the things that you're saying are a lot of mirror images of myself, right? But I think too often we can sit back and say, okay, I'm just going to let that be because I don't need to call them out on that. And then, you know, a particular group or a particular belief gains power and traction, and suddenly that becomes not even just a mainline belief, but becomes a source of even potentially political power, right? I don't think we've seen this to this extent in the United States, but certainly if you go back to like Salem, Massachusetts, you know, a particular religious belief around witch trials, right? And you know that takes hold, and no one outside of Christianity said, I don't think this is in line with what we're supposed to be talking about.
Look, there are a lot of hate groups with religious roots,
right? So, right. And so when that takes power, you know, at that point it might be too late to be able to say no, this is not and I think it's just an awareness that we have to have that at some point, you know, the food sacrificed to idols becomes problematic. And we have to be aware of where are those lines for us and what are the lines that we are not willing to cross and what are the lines that we have to stand up and say no one should be crossing that line.
Mm-hmm. That's hard, man. I don't know.
I definitely think we're going to walk away from this with a lot of there's not easy answers here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And sometimes there's not easy answers where we wish there were. That ultimately, again, Paul in his analogy is going to give two bits of advice. And one is you're fine and the other is you shouldn't do it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that's hard. Like, you know, how much should one, you know, in any situation, social situation, what's fine and what shouldn't you do is tough.
Right.
These are tough places to be. And so hopefully these are questions that we want to ask our fellow believers and in Bible study, in church settings, of how can we explore these issues of faith together? Because as much as I agree with you, Katie, like every individual has to make those lines for themselves. There's great wisdom to be had by joining together and saying, where mm-hmm. do we as a community, as a group, draw those lines?
Yeah.
And that can be helpful for all of us to explore those things together.
Or where do we stop drawing lines?
Yes. Because sometimes we say... We lean on our Christian freedoms because I don't want to change.
Sure.
And that is not drawing a line or not drawing a line.
Right.
That's sinfulness or apathy.
Right.
You know, I'm just leaning on a Christian freedom because I don't want to change the things that I like. And I don't think that that's healthy for the church either. So these are tough questions.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so I've got a recommendation for us today.
All right.
Yeah, so hey, we're talking about engaging into some of these really challenging topics and things that we all still struggle with. My recommendation, I guess, I don't know, I'll speak for myself. Maybe you guys agree with this or not. My recommendation to you is to think about that person or that group of people that you have been struggling to see things from their point of view, right? Mm-hmm. Whatever that might be. You know you disagree with them and you're just really struggling to see their point of view, and really take an intentional effort to have that conversation, have that difficult dialogue, and see what turns out of that. And maybe do a lot more listening than you do talking, and just let them talk for a while mm-hmm. and see if you learn mm-hmm. anything, see what that might look like. And then think about where those lines are for you in that conversation. And are you willing to make some concessions, or are these things that we can't concede on because our faith calls us to something different? But just have that conversation. And then we'd love to hear about it. If you engage in that dialogue, send us an email, shoot us a message on Facebook. We would love to hear about that and maybe share some of those on the podcast on a future episode.
That sounds great.
Where can they find us?
Hey, you can find us everywhere. Fine podcasts are being downloaded, whether that's Google Play, Spotify, iTunes, all the places, all the things. Be sure to like, rate, review, subscribe, all that stuff. Share it out to your friends, neighbors, colleagues, acquaintances, random people you meet on the street, people you're stuck next to in traffic, wherever you might be. Let them know about Beyond Sunday.
And
we'd love to hear back
from you.
Even people you don't agree with, because we want to be in conversation with people that we don't agree with, and we don't want to just be talking to people that agree with us already. That's no fun. So let us know what you think, and you can email us at beyondsundaypodcast@gmail.com. You can send us Katie, stop being distracted by cute baby pictures of Patrick's son. I get it, but we're trying to wrap up a podcast.
Look
here.
At his belly.
You can find us at beyondsundaypodcast.com. You can check us out on Facebook, on Instagram, all the things, not on Twitter. We don't do the Twitter. Maybe someday, but not right now. And that's all I got. Okay, stop showing off baby memes.
Oh,
and send
gosh.
Us home, or send us out, Patrick. Come on.
Yeah. All right. Sorry, I'm looking at pictures of my little son.
All right, we get it. Your child's adorable. Let's go. We got to wrap this thing up.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We will see you next week.
Have a great week.